Welcome to our new podcast, In the Hunt, powered by GameForge.
All right, In the Hunt members, this is Brian Bailey here in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'd say outside of Charlottesville, I got to give Earlysville its credit. I'm in Earlysville, Virginia, bringing you this month's updated podcast. Today, we have Mark Sweeney joining us as always. Mark, how's everything going down in the Sunshine State?
Everything's normal down here, getting hot, getting ready for the summer.
It's been hot in Mid-Atlantic. You guys must be roasting right now.
Yeah, it's pretty much kicked in at this point, the heat. So it's going to start turning the early lesson days, lessons before 10 o'clock or see you tomorrow.
That's right.
Or starting at 7. If the green was mowed at 7, I'd start at 6:30.
No, I don't know how. Again, we talk about this every year. I don't know how you survive that summer of brutality that runs all the way till November.
Summer of brutality. The inferno.
It really is. But you know, you guys are tough down there and a little bit crazy, so it all works.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So
got our fair share of criminals.
Yeah, so today's podcast, we're gonna jump into that, but real quick, what did you think of the DJ coming out for the LIV, you know, the initial start of the new league funded by our friends in Saudi Arabia?
I think anybody supporting that's putting their neck out there a little bit, that's for sure.
I think it's the DJ just doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, I think the people who really don't just really don't care are just going to do what they're going to do. But you know, he's got more leverage with the tour than probably a lot of people do. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how strong the tour stance is on this.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because if you go and look at all the other people, it's all a bunch of wash-ups, used to be's, and
older guys
never were. So again, I think it's quite interesting that it's a coup that they got him, but then it's funny that the old Philster, Mr. I'm a couple hundred million in debt from gambling, didn't get the invite.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see shake out. I don't really know what the player's contract is with the PGA Tour and kind of what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. But I think that'll all be shook out in court over the next year or two.
No, I agree. There's going to be a lot of lawyers making a lot of money joining brand new clubs due to this.
There's enough money on the line where it's going to end up in court for sure.
Yeah, a lot of these lawyers are going to have some really nice new memberships at some of the most elite golf courses in the world.
Right.
And I have to say, I think Phil is that political term, useful idiot. Stuck his head out, got it chopped on both sides.
Chopped. Everybody else was sitting outside watching. Got nothing in return. Everybody else is watching it like, okay, what happened over there?
he's stealth banned from the PGA Tour, and the new tour didn't even invite him.
Hung out to dry.
Whoopsie. All
right. Well, how to piss off everybody.
That's right. Oh, poor guy. Phil's facade has forever been changed.
Right.
But all right, so let's actually jump into something that matters. Well, maybe it matters to us in a small world of just talking nonsense. We're going to talk today about kind of next level coaching. This idea really stemmed from a conversation I had with a couple college coaches the last couple days and a junior parent kind of yesterday. We sat down and just kind of, all right, I have all this great information now. Of course, we're using GameForge, but if you're using those secondary, less important systems, there's a lot of information there too. I have all this data now, all this great information. What now?
Yeah, exactly. I put my rounds in. What do I do? What do I look at? Right.
Exactly.
Which is kind of the standard problem with stats programs, right? You enter your data and then most of them just give you so much data back. You kind of go, okay, like what's the first thing I do? What do I do tomorrow when I go to the range? You know, what's my real problem? How do I advance from this level to the next? That's probably the biggest thing. Doesn't necessarily give you an answer of how you advance.
No, I agree. And I think that's kind of the exciting part is if you kind of understand the data and you understand what that means to the player reaching the next level, having a benchmark, understanding to be able to shoot a certain score, I need to be within certain guardrails, certain tolerances. It just starts to provide structure on what it takes to get better. And And to kind of give an example, the player, the parent I talked to yesterday, daughter's hitting 12 greens. We've talked about this in the past, the 50-50-50 rule, hit 12 greens, 50 of them within 20 feet, make half of those, you make three birdies, miss six greens, get half of those with roughly or a little past half, walk away with three bogeys. So I was like, well, good. They're well within tolerance. You know, well, how many imposition? And he goes,
four. No idea.
So, yeah. So I'm like, 12 greens, four or 20 feet in. I was like, there's trouble, right? So now we're looking at 8.5 putts outside of 20 feet. You do that for a 3-day tournament. You know, we're at 16, 20, 25 and a half putts that are outside of 20 feet. Not a whole lot of birdie making going on out there.
Not a lot of birdie, and definitely throwing some plenty of three jacks in there.
Yeah. So that, you know, their question was, I'm hitting good greens, and this is kind of the knowledge they had. And I'm like, well, what we've got to start to do is let's kind of peel this back a little bit of the 12 greens. Now we know, and then basically I think they had one blackjack. So right. Really not, you know, four birdie opportunities, and she's converting roughly, oh God, she's making roughly less than two birdies around. So that concept of how do I make more birdie? How do I get better? You know, the question is, well, we got to hit more shots in position. So, you know, what are we going to do there, Mark?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody's shooting over par and they're still trying to get to par, you know, like you said, our benchmark is 12 greens. If everything else is working, 12 greens should get you right around par. So I had something similar. I had a student who was hitting 13 greens and shooting like 74. And I'm like, okay, well, 13 greens, you should be a nudge under par. You should be, for a fact. So you've got a proximity problem or a putting problem or a scrambling problem. There's something going on in there. So yeah, if you're hitting 12 greens and only got four inside 20 feet, there's three possibilities. Possibility one is you just can't control your irons that well. You're just hitting loose shots, which is not necessarily the case if you're hitting greens. Possibility two is your targeting is too conservative. You're going middle of the green, middle of the green, middle of the green, right? And possibility three is you're coming in from too far. So your approach shots are too far away. So your standard competitive golfer should have, you know, six to seven inside 20 feet on 12 greens if you've only got four. Are you just approaching it with long irons too often? Or are you not controlling your short to mid irons? Or are you just going for the middle of green and being safe? And that's got to be a diagnosis that's done with the player or with the coach and just understanding which of those things is it. So where you're coming in from is easy. We just go look at your approach densities in game four. Just say, where are you coming in from? Oh, you got a whole bunch outside 150. Okay, well, that might explain it, right? Or you've got a whole bunch 150 and in and your dispersion graph is showing that you're just not hitting it close enough given that distance. Your dispersion is too big.
Yeah, and it's really funny. The basically what we came up with was B. If you looked at her density shots, she was it's junior golf, right? So junior golf tend to be, you know, they tend to have a lot of shorter shots in. So her core five was basically from about 110 to about 160. Where it should be.
Yeah.
But the problem was is she was underachieving pretty much the entire way. Anywhere from 10 to 20% below what we would call optimal. So the question was, and then we went and looked at dispersions, right? Okay. Let's when you hit the green, she was averaging 6%, which so when not she bad. Was hit the green, she was doing what she needed to.
Yeah, not bad.
Her big misses, she was only, I think she was at 10 or 11 for all shots. And then she had a couple zones where she had big misses for missed greens. So when we really boiled it down, it was targeting. It was, I'm scared of missing the green here. So I aim here and I'm adding that extra 8, 10, 12 feet because I'm shying away from whatever reason it is. And that's keeping her outside of the 20 foot zone. And right. Then, so we kind of did the math and I told her, this is real simple, right? I said, you're playing with the best player in whatever tour you're playing with. And basically you're going to tell this player as we tee it off, I'm going to go ahead and give you 9 birdie putts more this tournament and I'm going to come catch you. How's that work?
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. Right. So the best player,
you can't putt well enough.
Yeah, no. And you better like I said, you're converting at, you know, 20% at in position. When you only got four options, you better get that up around 80, 90%. Like, yeah, you're not going to get there. So
you're not getting there. Exactly.
I think a lot of times when you're able to look at a player and say, this is what it means. If you took one of the best players in the world and said, hey, or inside of your league or conference or whatever, you know, part of golf you're playing, and saying, this is the advantage you're giving this player just in ball striking. What does that mean to you? Like, how often are you going to beat this person by giving away this, this, and this? And right. I think a lot of times if you frame it that way to a lot of players, they understand it, opposed to, oh, you're losing half a shot here or whatever. But if you can say literally, like, you're giving them nine good birdie opportunities, and we're not even going to talk about your three putt opportunities, because you're going to have, you know, they're looking at probably five. They're looking at probably about the same, nine less putts outside of 20 feet. So there's a big gap there. And again, go get them. How confident do you feel? And the dad's just sitting over there going, I've been saying this forever. I've been saying this forever. But again, I think, so to me, this is kind of next level coaching, right? Now that, you know, I got a player, I'm starting to understand the language of GameForge. I'm understanding what performance is. Now we've got to say, all right, so now we're struggling inside of this zone. So how, like, if you had a player that had a targeting issue, let's say between 110 and 150, 160, kind of where this player was, what would be some training ideas that you might be able to give to maybe help bridge that gap a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking about coming with short irons?
Yeah.
Well, I think they need to understand what their short iron dispersion is. And if they're at 5 or 6%, which is kind of where it should be, they need to understand that middle of the green when you're coming in with a pitching wedge, unless there's water right next to the pin, you know, and to be honest, most pins outside PGA Tour are not that close to the edge either.
Yeah.
I mean, PGA Tour is 3-4 steps off the edge, you know, 10, 12, 15 feet. But you go to college and that gets 10, 15 feet more towards the middle, at least 2 to 3 more steps more towards the middle. So it's not like they're really, you know, 5% from 100 yards is 5 yards, it's 15 feet. And most pins are more than 15 feet from the edge. So suddenly, even if you're going straight the pin from 100 yards, you've still got your 5-6% dispersion still gets you barely off the collar if you miss on the short side.
And I think that's the big difference, is people have access to some of the best technology ever inside of the golf industry, right? We got TrackMans, flight scopes, tons of radar systems, video camera systems, all these great systems that are giving you all this great data. But again, it's starting to be able to learn to target. And I think there's other systems out there and targeting that, you know, sometimes can be a little risk averse, might have you hitting away from certain things to try to avoid a certain number. But if your goal is to win and is to really shoot low numbers, you can't be hiding. You can't be staying away from things, especially with, you know, for this player, I asked her, you know, what goes 150? And she's like, that's my 8 iron. So pretty much everything we're looking at is 8 iron and below, and we're not hitting enough shots inside of 20 feet.
Yeah, and we're talking short irons at that point.
Yeah, so again, for her, we've got to learn to be aggressive and target. So I gave her just a simple drill. Late afternoons, they go play a bunch. Just go fire at pins.
Yeah.
Other than a hazard, fire at everything.
Yeah, and don't be terrified about the occasional short side. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're terrified of getting short side, well, first of all, go work on your wedges a little bit and just deal with the fact you're going to give up bogey half the time you miss, which is pretty standard.
Yep.
But you don't want to trade that off with never having a birdie putt either.
No, I agree. And that's where I think this risk averse system for a lot of players kind of sets them up to fail, because it takes away birdie opportunities, but it also sets up three putt. We're setting up 8 putts outside of 20 feet. And you got to think a couple of them are starting to get out 35, 40 feet.
Yeah.
That's just hard. Yeah. That's a lot of stress on a putter. She came to me with putting issues, and she actually putted pretty well. Her fundamentals were good. She taught herself aim point via the web. So we had to kind of work through a lot of that. And her speed control
through YouTube,
some other app, I don't know. And then so her concepts were actually relatively good. But the problem was, is she just didn't have opportunities. You know, they're sitting there going, I don't putt well enough. And I go, well, technically you're averaging 34 putts from the kind of dispersion that you have. That's actually okay.
It's actually it's relatively okay. expected.
It's,
yeah.
It's acceptable considering the fact that, you know, you have no birdie opportunities. Yeah. And then, so I think, again, it's just as a coach, our job as a coach is to figure out those components inside of a game and start opening those up. And, you know, I'm not a full swing coach anymore, but I can get into the weeds and say, all right, you're XYZ distance. Now the question is, go to your coach. I'm struggling at these distances. Why? You know, is it a technique issue? Is it an equipment issue? Is it a targeting? Is it a shape a shot or unable to shape a shot or control spins, whatever? Now you can start kind of peeling pieces back and really hone in on why you're underachieving. But before she had game forward, she had no clue. She's hitting 12 greens and thought, I'm doing what I'm supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't know, you don't know. Like, I talk about this all the time. I do lessons where, and I think I did a quick bite on this, but a player will almost every time I get a new player, they're like, I'm like, what are you trying to do? Like, what are you working on? What do you think's the problem? And they'll say, well, I'm told that X. I'm told my putter doesn't fit me. I'm told my head's moving. I'm told whatever. I'm pushing it. And I always say, are you actually doing that? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, well, if you don't know, then why are you working on that to fix it? And then I'm like, even if you are doing that, is that what's preventing you from putting better? And they say, I don't know. I'm like, okay, well, let's figure that out real quick here before you go down this path of changing something that may have no effect whatsoever on your putting. Like none. Like it's so standard. And full swing is going to be the same, right? I'm not making enough birdies. Why? I don't know. I guess I need to hit it closer. Okay, well, what does that mean exactly?
How do you do that? I don't know.
I don't know.
I got to hit it further off the tee. Okay.
Gotta
but what longer. Does that mean? Does that mean
maybe not? I'm not sure yet. We got to look at the numbers.
Yeah, further off the tee. Does that mean you're going to be hitting it out of the rough more? I don't know.
right. Exactly.
It's that second. I always joke it, same thing, kind of like politics. It's that second level question, right? It's real easy to throw out the easy question. Well, I just don't make enough birdies.
Right. And it's funny because everybody goes to birdies first. A lot of times it's not the birdies, it's the bogeys. I've seen people make average 4 birdies around and 5 bogeys.
Yeah.
And they're like, I need to make more birdies. I'm like, no, you don't. You're making way too many bogeys. Yeah. Way too many.
You're making 4 birdies. You shouldn't be making 5 bogeys.
No. You definitely should not.
Or you're a feast and famine person, man. You either stone it or miss the green by a mile and a half, which is, there are players out there. I've seen it. I've actually coached a couple.
Right. I'm sure.
But I think another one that I get, and I think this is real, like, that's a really good player kind of side of it. And now a kind of a coach's side, I had a conversation with a couple coaches and they were talking about, my team is not very good at wedges. Okay. So again, next level question, what are you looking for? Right.
Yeah.
And they were saying, well, we just feel that when they play, and they use the feel word, and and I'm like, little antennae come up. Like, I feel that other teams do a much better job with wedges than we do, and we practice them and whatnot. And I'm like, fine. I go, well, what are your, where are your players' strengths and weaknesses inside of wedges, just on distances? Where are they really good at hitting it close, and where are they really far? And they just kind of looked at me.
Are we talking about like approach wedges? Like,
yeah. So they're saying, basically outside of 50 yards out to about 110. We just don't feel like we score enough. And I'm like, okay, what, each player probably plays a little bit different. Which ones hit it really good at certain distance bends and which ones don't? And they just kind of looked at me like, shouldn't they all be good?
Well, in theory, just that whole theory versus reality Irish joke.
In theory, technically they could all be really good.
Well, I just looked at a player, I think a couple of days ago, PGA Tour player who all the way up like 60 to 90 yards was terrible, all the way up to 90 yards. You think a tour player would be pretty darn good at 90 yards with a little sand wedge or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was actually didn't get any good till 100 yards, but 80 and 90, he was actually terrible. No, it was like really kind of surprised me.
Well, And my comment for her was there's very few players on the tour level when we looked at the data that, where they kind of trace the optimal curve. There was, a few of them that kind of mirrored it, but they all had sections inside of that wedge zone where they really dropped off. And some of it might be a 10, 20 yard distance, some 30, 40 yards that they try to stay away from.
Yeah.
So, my question to her is, what you need to figure out with your players is, or is there a certain zone that you're not very good at in the short term? Can we stay away from that? And then as we stay away from that, that's a, you know, that's a game planning conversation. And as we stay away from that, now what can we do? Now we can go in there and let's go see if we can figure out, can we find this shot? You know, what do we need to do to hit it 60 yards, 70 yards? Do we have the equipment? You know, what does that look like? Can we change things around? Can we change technique? Can we change energy, length? Can we start playing with these pieces and find it? And for some players, you might find it. And for some players, they just might be too much variance inside of certain zones. So again, that would go back into a conversation of, can we stay out of that zone? And the beauty is, and I told her, your players should be good enough at the college level to stay away. And so that means off a tee, hitting a three wood or an iron possibly.
Yeah, that's a lot of that. A lot of that's just choice of tee shots, right?
Yeah, and then laying up wise, like, can I physically get it within a certain distance, or should I, you know, I'm going to keep it further back.
Staying out of the bunker.
I said the beauty, not in a bunker.
Stay out of the bunker.
Or a hazard, even worse.
Stay out of the fairway bunkers, whatever you do.
But that question is that those are conversations that need to be had with the players and come up with a game plan on how to move that player. It's not just swing. And I think that's probably my number one gripe I have with most coaches is they think they can overcome everything with a technique. Maybe equipment. Like if I do this and this, I can give you this shot.
Yeah.
Maybe. And again, is it how reliable and whatnot? So I think a lot of times, again, the question is there's a cost benefit. You know, they can't perform at a certain level, but if they're 20 yards further back and we know that they do perform at a certain level, it's okay. You know, you might be giving away a percentage of shot, but, you know, ideally, you know, over an entire season, the player's going to feel a whole heck of a lot. Hitting the green at 80 yards and missing the green or hitting really crappy shots at 60 shots that might end up the same. Emotionally, you walk away feeling completely different.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's always that. That's like missing a 7-foot birdie eagle putt, you know,
or that's right.
Birdie putt. Very different emotion than missing a 7-foot par say when you're three jacking.
That's true. And then their follow-up question is, all right, great, we got all this great wedge information, now we don't putt very good. Well, I said it's college, none of them do.
Right
Yeah, it's a very small group.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a fact.
Putts well, and then, you know, then the conversation was, how do you get, you know, again, if you had a golf team, Mark, let's say unfortunately, you were drafted and now you're a college golf coach. And you had to get a team collectively better. What would you do as a college golf coach to get your team collectively better on the putting green? Other than learning aim point.
Well, first of all, I'm not a big fan of collectively, what do we need to do? I'm much more of a fan of, you know, what does each player need to do? But if you look at most college teams, starting with three putts, frankly, for a lot of college teams, the three putts are just freaking out of control, you know. Yeah. And those are typically a mix of bad lag putting and bad short putting, which is what most three putts are. But I mean, unless somebody's down at half a three putt around or less, which very few college players are, like, that's something that I see pretty much everybody can work on.
Yeah.
Across the board, but you've got to understand read, you got to understand speed on these long ones, and you've got to be really good 6 feet in. So then you go back to say, okay, well, let's just start 6 feet in. I always start 5-6 feet in, because that's mostly par save putts, and they're easy to teach, and they're not that hard of a putt if you know the good read, and that alone will just save tons of strokes right there. So I usually start there, then work your way back to the kind of your lag putts and just make sure they're reading them right, because most people underread them and don't read them right at all to begin with. Right. And then speed is just a whole nother can of worms. Like, speed, you got to always do with everybody. Like, that's just constantly. Everybody needs to work on speed. So you can't go wrong with working on speed either. But I like to be a little more focused on, let's make sure everybody's rock solid 6 feet in, and let's work on speed every single day.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think the answer of, if you're collectively doing anything, you're collectively making everyone average. All right. Because inside of a game, especially golf, where everybody's skill sets are different, everybody's strengths and weaknesses are different, and everybody's needs are different, you know, again, if I have a player that hits, you know, like a Justin Thomas that never hits it outside of 20 feet, I'm not going to spend a whole heck of a lot of time working on 40
feet. On 40 feet? No, that's just not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
You're just never here, bro.
Like, right. Yeah.
And you're pretty talented. You'll figure it out. You know, so again, I think the question is, and this is kind of where I hit the coach, and it's simple and they do bits of it, but you've got to evaluate each player, put them through an assessment, see what they do in tournament play, and then come up with a game plan that matches what is their biggest gap, you know,
player by player.
Again, now if you want to come together collectively and do some birdie game, you know, birdie putting, par save games, and compete as a team, you know, I'm all about competition. I love that. But you can't, you know, I saw so many college coaches that would just say, today we're working on wedges and everybody hit wedges today. Why? I have one girl here that never has wedges.
Which
another
lie.
Girl that can't do a lick. So I'm just reinforcing, you know, I'm wasting one girl's day and I'm reinforcing another girl that you just suck. Yeah. And it's, oh, what a great coaching plan I put together today.
Yeah, I saw one where, and I do agree that most college teams have too many three putts, but the coach's answer was, let's all go work on three footers. And my answer was, yeah, but you're not three putting from 3 feet. You're three putting from 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 feet after the first putt, not from 3 feet. So three putter is probably not going to move the needle on that.
Well, it goes back to where does a three putt come from? You know, too far from the hole from your approach, probably bad distance control read.
Bad read and distance combined, probably.
You can't clean it up inside of 6 feet. So working on 3 feet answers 1% of the problem.
Right, right. It's a very small percentage of, and that's why you need to, like in game four, you go in there and look and say, where do my three putts come from?
Yeah.
How far was I? How far was the first putt? And then how far was my follow-up par save?
Yep.
Not 3 feet very often.
No,
I agree. Very, very rarely.
And again, like I said, if you do assessments inside of practice and kind of say, hey, here's strengths, weaknesses, here's why I'm missing X, Y, Z, you know, talking, putting, read, speed, start line, you know, just really simple. Like, and then that will at least create a conversation and help you come up with your coaching plan of, you know, when player X three putts the most at distance, player X says, you know, my speed control is my biggest issue. Cool. Now we know that, right? So now when they come out to see you, we have a plan opposed to, yeah, let's get in front of that little box over there and let's see if we can work on your angle of attack and get that, you know, 1 degree better, which will surmount to you putting no percent better. Instead of performance.
No percent, 0% better.
You know, roughly. It's not an exact number, but it's pretty daggone accurate.
Well, I mean, as far as group activity, speed control, all day. I don't have any problem with everybody doing speed control because nobody's mastered speed control.
No, and it doesn't hurt. Like,
I'm not too bothered by kind of 4 to 6, 4 to 10 feet. But again, you kind of have to, you know, you got to look at the players. If somebody is really, really, really good in there, I wouldn't spend too much time. Like, make sure they stay sharp in there. But, you know, player by player, you definitely have to tweak their practice and customize their practice to what their specific gap is.
Yeah, I think you nailed it too. I think us as coaches, sometimes we get so fixated on we need to move this percentage, this point, that we forget that there's an entire game. So you always have to benchmark. You always have to say, this part of my game is good. Whatever I've been working on up to this point, it's working. So let's make sure that we put in the same effort and time to create that. But when we have these gaps in time, multiple weeks off where I can peel some time back and go focus in on a single point, I think that is of the utmost importance as a coach to start. For all my players, I have a notes folder for all of them. And I put in notes of things that I want to work on. I just don't have time. Right. Well, I got 4 events coming up in the next 5 weeks. Well, we're not adding this.
We're not doing this yet. I have a list of things I want to accomplish, but for right now,
what we're going to do is we're going to do some, you know, we're going to make sure your reads are right. That your process is really good. That your speed control is really good. All right, and I'm just going to sing your praises and try to get you to believe you're the best player that you can be on the putting green, right?
Right.
Because, you know, if I tell you, well, your path is coming a little bit and your face is actually not the right time.
Yeah, let's not do that before a 4-week stretch.
Like my son, whacked. like I told my son the other day, I said, you got to learn to feel the room. He asked a question. He wanted to go spend the night, and we're getting ready to go out of town. He wanted to spend the night before, and my wife just got home from work and was a little high strung, and he like just dropped it. And then she was like, what are you bringing this up to me now? And I'm like, dude, you got to feel the room out. That was the wrong time to ask that question.
Wrong time, exactly.
A golf coach is the same way. I just can't drop knowledge on you and expect, you know, right before a tournament, expect good things to happen. Then, you know, that's the best way to get fired is to drop a lot of knowledge on a play and be so bound up and never make a putt. And they just never come back.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like every person we see the, I'll get to that later issues, right? Yep. Well, we don't need to do that now. At some point we'll need to get to it. We're not throwing it all at you today.
And I think that's higher level coaching. That's coaching. That's understanding where we're trying to go. What pieces can I affect right now to kind of push them towards their target goal? But again, not be the coach that, you know, the worst thing I think on earth is I have to break you before I fix you. No, you can work on the edges and get pieces better until you have that gap where you can install big change. But I think a lot of people and a lot of coaches use that as an excuse to, you know, I'm going to change this and you're just going to play really crappy. Well, why do I want to do that? You know, I've never understood that philosophy. I'm going to break you to make you better. You shouldn't have to break me. We can work on one component. But to break me, you know, but it's hard to unbreak people.
That's what I've seen. You break somebody, it's hard to unbreak them.
Yeah. If a coach ever tells you that, run. Cause they're full of it. And then,
yeah.
And then again, here kind of basing off of, you know, that player that I was working with over the weekend, you know, they were talking speed control with, you know, when we did assessments, you know, I always ask before I put her through all the different assessments before the first time I ever met her. I said, let's go through all the assessments. We did 8 feet and then 9 to 20, 20 to 40, a couple benchmarking things. And, you know, every time I would say, well, you know, what do you think your strength inside of this zone is? And what do you think your weakness is? And it's really interesting to hear their feedback before you do it, right? Oh, my speed control is great. And my start lines tend to be my, you know, my nemesis at distance. Okay, let's see.
Let's find out. That's what I would say. Let's find out.
And then you brought in, you're like, today, no.
5 or 6 bucks, we know the answer.
So she told me her speed control was really good. Everything else wasn't very. Her reads were actually pretty good. Butchered aim point, but, you know, self-taught well enough. Reads were actually decent. Start lines, she told me where she's aiming and she'd send it and they were within tolerance. I was like, that's pretty good. And she was short and long of the hole, right? So I looked at her after the one assessment and I go, how far does your sand wedge go? And she goes, 85, 90 yards. I was like, awesome. I said, if I told you to hit it 80 yards or 70 yards, what would that look like? And she had her putter in her hand. She swung about here. And I go, show me what that finish would look like. And she went to her finish. I said, what if you had to hit it 50 yards? And she said, that's roughly, well, I like to turn my feet here to reduce my back turn. And so she went through this whole process. I like to do this, this, and this. I swing to here, boom, right, 50 yards. I said, awesome. I said, show me what a 30-foot putt looks like.
Oh.
She just stared at me like, what?
Mama say what?
30 foot, and she goes and she takes the putter back and she goes through. I go, does that go 30 feet? She goes, I really don't know. I think so. I go, here's the problem with instruction, right? You spend all this time and hard work and hitting wedges, which is awesome. And you know exactly what that picture is and what that feel is and what that shot's gonna do and how it's gonna hit the green and how it's gonna spin. And I'm saying, what does 30 feet look like? And it's like,
nothing, crickets.
Nothing. So I said, do you think we need to learn what 30 feet roughly feels like on a flat surface? And then we can start playing uphill, downhill games and how to adjust out of that. And she goes, yeah, that might be beneficial.
Yeah, I would say that's not an unusual. I've never asked it that cleanly before to a player, but that would not be an unusual thing to ask a player, like what's a 15 foot backhill swing look like?
Yeah,
they know. What they tend to do is do like a little mechanical, like, you know, they take practice strokes and they're just kind of doing a mechanical move. They're not actually simulating the actual speed. And I'm like, you think that ball is going to go 15 feet? You might get 6 if you're lucky out of that stroke. Maybe.
That's when you say, go grab a wedge.
That's what I'm like. That ball is never going to get there. You're never getting the ball anywhere near the hole with that. No chance.
But again, I think a lot of that, again, I think it goes back to concepts of, you know, what does it look like to hit that shot? And I think the number one error with most coaches when they teach and most players when they learn is everything falls back into a technique, skill, you know, my left arm here, my right arm, you know, instead of saying the putter roughly needs to move this distance in this time. How I move it within reason, it doesn't really, especially at distance, is less important. But they don't think that way. Everything gets so mechanical, so rigid, or they just never thought of it. You know, they just think that, you know, if I do X, Y, Z, I create a perfect putt. So I think most people's distance controls, they just don't understand. Again, we talk about all the time, the concept of what it takes to roll the ball, you know, a certain distance. And I joke now today, it's not really rolling at a certain distance. It's getting it to stop at a certain distance. The greens have gotten so good.
Yeah.
It's not that I need to physically move the ball 30 feet. The key is can I stop it right around 30 feet?
Can I stop it where I want to stop it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's like a greenside wedge, right? What are you trying to do? I'm trying to stop the ball somewhere.
Yeah.
It's about stopping it more than anything.
I'm trying to control a trajectory.
Yeah.
That's going to kind of come in at a certain angle, and it's only going to roll out X amount of feet, and it's going to end up within a certain distance of the hole.
How do I stop the ball where I want to stop the ball?
People are really good at giving you approach shots on what that looks like and wedges. Chipping gets a little less. I got to admit, chipping gets a little less. But putting, there's no concept of, oh, if I take the putter roughly back this far in this amount of time, it should give me X amount of feet. It's magic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's why we start our speed training with those speed strips. Just, are you taking it back an appropriate distance for this putt or not?
Yeah.
And if no, then everything goes out of whack at that point. Your accelerations go out of whack. Your accelerations go out of whack. Your face can go out of whack, and you know, so it's just snowballs. It's a bad snowball. The evil snowball.
And like I said, once you start to understand these numbers and what's happening, like my instruction is really simple. It's kind of elementary. So you come to me and say, I have a problem with this. We've gone through assessments, or you've been doing assessments. We see strengths and weaknesses. We say, hey, it's a start line issue inside of 8 feet, right? My blackjacks, I'm just not hitting my line well enough. So then we're like, all right, let's assess line. So I put you on a drill where we're assessing line only. And then from that, we're going to say, well, are we missing left, right? Why is that? And then we're going to kind of work from there. So I think, again, everything is, you know, the way I kind of train, everything's a decision tree, X, Y, Z, right? I'm not making enough putts. Where are we not making enough putts? We go look at the numbers. We assess, look at make percentages in tournaments. We just keep blowing that out, and start finding those pieces where you need to get better. And if you don't do it kind of in that kind of logical step-by-step way, I think you can end up in some really goofy places and working on some stuff that really doesn't matter. I know there's an artistry to everything in the world.
Yeah,
I get that, but
the art is working between the lines. But if you start at score, then you go to birdies and bogeys, and then you go to offense and defense, the decision tree plays out pretty accurately.
I agree.
You know, now how you actually move a player, you got to know what the problem is.
Yep.
You know, then the art of coaching at that point and training is, how do you actually move somebody off of that number to a new number?
Yep. I agree. And that's, I think, again, knowing it helps. So once you kind of have the knowledge of where it is, then you as a coach can say, this is what the issue is. Here's how we're going to fix it. You know, is it equipment? Is it technique? Is it, you know, what component is that that's causing me to fail at start line? And then you can diagnose that and get them better, and you keep them as a player for years, and they pay you a lot of money, and they celebrate when they win a lot, and you get to enjoy all of that and have
a great
college coaching and just a coaching lifestyle.
Wait a second. You're saying players are grateful after they win?
Well,
some are.
Some. I've met two.
Some. Not a whole lot, but some.
Two. I'm really grateful for a little bit. And then they got life. No, I'm kidding. No, some of them are.
Some are. Yes, yeah, some are.
Well, I'm grateful every time I send my my Stripe bill out and it gets returned back. I call that gratefulness.
That's a simple man's grateful right there.
That is simple, man.
I'll take that as a thank you.
I've invoiced you and you've paid me, so I'll call that.
We're coming to call it even.
Cool. But yeah, I don't get too many Christmas gifts.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't expect any.
No, I don't either. I'm a pagan anyways. No.
Heathen.
Yeah, that's right. But all right, so we'll go ahead and we're already at 40 minutes here, and we didn't think we'd be able to talk on this for more than 15. So
yeah.
As always, we completely impress ourselves. We don't know you listening are impressed, but we impress ourselves. So that's all that really matters. So we'll dive outside of this In the Hunt. I know we're in June, just started. So this In the Hunt will be out June 2nd. I think today's the 1st. So this will be out tomorrow. Yeah. I also have inside of Fuel, we're doing kind of monthly breakouts. So this month inside of Fuel, we have assessments, how to assess putting. So we're going to walk you through short putts. I think Mark does that next week. We go medium putts with Gareth McShay. And then I'm going to do some long putt stuff and kind of full game putting to end the month. And we're going to show you how to run assessments on it, how to kind of what they don't tell you on it, and some quick bites on how to improve inside of that. So it's really geared for the player. Some coaches that aren't putting coaches might find it really helpful as well. But that's kind of where we're going this month. And I know inside of Fuel, we just kind of changed our pricing structure. We do listen. We're stubborn, but we do listen. So our subscribers said we want the full catalog. We're tired of, you know, waiting each month or whatever. So we've went ahead and opened up the entire Fuel catalog to you at $49 a month, $49.95 or something like that, or $4.99 for the year. And that have access to everything in Fuel right now, which is 45, 50 hours of stuff.
There's a lot in there.
And then we keep adding every month, you know, probably 4 to 5 hours a month of actual content inside of there. So if you're not a Fuel member, they're still free. You can buy by the video. But if you want a full catalog, shows all of our seminars, all of our videos that we've produced, definitely jump in there and enjoy our handiwork.
Yeah, there's a lot of content in there. A lot more than you think.
A whole lot more, because I went back and actually went through a bunch of it. And I'm like, God, I can't. Some of these I don't even remember making. And yeah, I actually watched some bunch of them. I'm like, that's pretty good. I should have paid for that one myself. I think very highly of myself. Thank you. But anything other than that, you know, if you have any questions or concerns about Fuel, about GameForge, In the Hunt, and our new Skunk Work project coming out with recruiting, our logo just got built. We'll be releasing more information on that. It's being built as we speak, so hopefully fall 2022. We're getting ready to upend recruiting at the college level here, and yeah, that's really exciting stuff.
Definitely will be fun.
So you want to close this out here, Mark?
So what's that?
You want to close this out here? I'm about to get a big thunderstorm.
Yeah, sure. Oh, your internet's about to go out.
Yeah.
The first raindrop, your internet goes out. Not even thunderbolt.
Pretty much. It does. Our wiring does not like rain.
Yeah. you'd think by now they would have figured that out there, but
no.
Not so much. Yeah. Thanks everybody for coming. We enjoy doing these. We'd love to hear your feedback. So please send us a message one way or another, whether it's on Instagram or email or whatever. Send us a message and just let us know topics you would like to cover, because we would love to cover what you want to hear about, rather than us just always talking about what we like talking about.
So thank you everybody again, and we look forward to future conversations.
Thank you. Cool.
Yeah, man, it's blowing sideways right now.
Is it really?
Yeah, we've been hot as shit, man. It's been like 100. It's been in the upper 90s, man.
This has been a Fuel production.